On This Week in Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Curtis Franklin and Mr. Brian Chi here today. Now, we talk a lot about no-code, low-code platforms and how they have lots of advantages. The question is, do they have disadvantages? We'll talk about that. We'll get into great discussion. Plus, the remote workforce has put more focus on digital workplaces. Today, we have Sam Kennedy, Senior Director at Crestron, to talk about flex digital workplaces, hybrid workforces, and hardware that brings it all together. Definitely shouldn't miss it. Twiet on the set.
Podcasts you love
from people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twiet, This Week at Enterprise Tech, episode 488, recorded April 8th, 2022. IT and AV merging. This episode of This Week at Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Linode. Get the cloud support experience you deserve with Linode. No tears, no handoffs. Get $100 in credit. Visit linode.com/Twiet. And by FlexTrack, the proactive security management platform. Save time and increase productivity with the premier cybersecurity reporting and workflow management product designed to support the complete security lifecycle from assessment through remediation. Visit FlexTrack.com/twit to claim your free month. And by IT Pro TV. Give your team an engaging IT development platform to level up their skills. Volume discounts start at 5 seats. Go to itpro.tv/enterprise. Make sure to mention Enterprise 30 to your designated IT Pro TV account executive to get 30% off or more on a business plan. Welcome to Twiet, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world is connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide to this big world of the enterprise. But if I can't guide you by myself, I need to bring in the professionals, the experts in their field, starting with our very own enterprise security expert. He's senior analyst at Omdia, and he's Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, great to see you, my friend. How you been?
Oh, it's been a great time down here in the City Beautiful. I've been actually off the last couple of days, but it's been nice. I have a new piece up at Dark Reading, and I've done a couple of interviews this week in my research on enterprise cybersecurity awareness training. It's been productive, and it's sunny outside. It's going to be a great weekend. So no complaints from down on this end of the country.
That's fantastic. It was great to have you on. Thanks, Curtis. Well, we also have to thank and welcome our very own IT and network expert as well. He's the net architect at Sky Fiber. He's all around tech geek. He's Mr. Brian Chi-Chiebert. It's great to have you back. How have you been?
I'm doing great. We had quite a thunderstorm yesterday. And it was big enough that, you know, my Tesla power walls flipped over and, you know, saved a bunch of extra juice. That was kind of cool. I'm really enjoying having a battery backup system for the house. It's actually big enough and smart enough that, you know, it might not be a bad idea for some, you know, small to mid-sized data centers. Going to be interesting. I really want to see big data center UPSs and how much they really cost when we start going to lithium ion. But as some of the guys in the chat room were talking about, there's some really interesting new battery technology on the horizon that is quite a bit less expensive than lithium ion and doesn't blow up. So ought to be interesting. Would love to see it.
Indeed, indeed. Well, speaking of productivity, it's actually been quite a productive week in the enterprise, so definitely should get started. Now, no-code and low-code platforms have tons of advantages, but the question is, do they have disadvantages as well? We'll get into a great discussion regarding that as well. Now, the remote workforce has put a lot of focus on digital workplaces. Today, we have Sam Kennedy, Senior Director from Crestron, and he's going to talk about the flex digital workplaces and how they can scale with your workforce. So stick around. We have lots to talk about there. But before we get into our guest, we also have a lot to think to talk about in the world of enterprise. So let's jump in to this week's news blips. Now, the market continues to look for signals that define the trends in the electronics industries from years to come. Now, unfortunately, signals coming from chip makers are painting a picture that might show a continual uphill battle for the industry. Now, an Asia-based economic publication called Nikkei Asia spoke with several chip makers looking to expand their production capacity. Now, most of them ran into a brick wall due to the long lead times, some hitting 18 months. That means that semiconductor factories like Intel or TSMC could hit a speed barrier, translating into supply chain constraints. Now, more commercial consumer applications for smart capabilities are putting demand on semiconductors. Now, even though plans for localized long-term expansion are in the works, it still requires a dip in production to actually get there. Now, TSMC's plans to expand Arizona's factory are already seeing delays in local construction. Now, leading chip toolmakers such as ASML, Applied Materials, and others have already sent out warnings regarding an 18-month delay to their users. Now, once the chip makers are actually manufacturing chips, they have to be integrated into the boards or the substrates that they will ultimately live in long term. Now, delayed work there means there could actually be 18 to 30 months more of lead time. And supply and demand are in full force, which means companies will have to prioritize products without supply. Now, some applications might suffer, such as lower margin products like entry level or mid-range CPUs, GPUs, or other applications. It would also force production on higher margin products such as servers, data centers, and supercomputer contracts instead. Now, this means the cascading effect on the industry will continue to see increased delays and costs, and the outlook over 2 years is not looking good.
Well, if you aren't running Apple's latest operating systems on your hardware, or maybe you're a bit loose in your patching practices, then we've got some disturbing news. You're probably vulnerable to one of two vulnerabilities Apple disclosed last week. Apple has already released updated versions of the software addressing the issues for their latest macOS Monterey and iOS 15 and iPadOS 15 operating systems, but seem to have skipped providing updates for the two immediately preceding versions of macOS, that's Big Sur and Catalina. This marks the first time since Apple released macOS Monterey last October that the company has not issued a patch for actively exploited vulnerabilities in Big Sur and Catalina, and actually goes against a practice that Apple has followed for nearly a decade, in which they patched the previous two macOS versions every time it issued a significant update for the current macOS. Intego, a company that makes security software for macOS, estimates that somewhere between 35 and 40% of all Macs are still running one of the OSs that predate Monterey. So if you're one of those who is running macOS Monterey or a current version of an Apple mobile OS, then please, please grab the update. If you're not, well, just be careful out there.
Okay, so this dark reading article has kind of got under my skin a little bit. So I've had many, many, many run-ins helping to set up systems for credit card processing. And as a result, you have to go and comply with the PCI DSS standards. Well, the article basically is called What You Need to Know About PCI DSS 4.0's New Requirements. The updated security payment standards goal is to, quote, address emerging threats and technologies and enable innovative methods to combat new threats to customer payment information, according to the PCI Security Standards Council. So the high level is the goals are ensure the standard continues to meet the security needs of the payments industry, add flexibility and support of additional methodologies to achieve security, promote security as a continuous process, and enhance validation methods and procedures. Well, I was more than a little frustrated when I last had to help some folks meet the requirements of previous PCI audit, standard audit, and it just lacked any kind of strong suggestions. I mean, I could use a really super El Cheapo firewall and it would still be fine with those standards. The nice thing is PCI DSS 4.0 does take some hints from the National Institute of Standards Technology for Digital Identities and is pushing for stronger authentication requirements. About time, folks. It, however, so far is only looking at the endpoints, aka the people that are actually doing the credit card scanning. And sadly, industry still isn't making any moves towards making the credit card itself stronger. In my opinion, this is only moving towards making those that handle the credit card transaction at the endpoints a bit more secure. But what about the rest of the transaction chain? My personal hope is that someday the endpoint transaction system to prevent credit card misuse is available, you know, like chip and pin, guys, really? Is it that hard?
The world is on a heightened alert for cyber warfare these days. Now, the fear is that targets could be critical but vulnerable infrastructure. Now, in the case of India, fear has become a reality. Now, India's power sector was targeted by hackers in a long-term operation not to have been carried out by state-sponsored Chinese group. Now, the hackers targeted seven Indian state centers responsible for electrical dispatch and grid control near a border area disputed by the two nuclear neighbors. Now, the group primarily used the Trojan ShadowPad, which is believed to have been developed by contractors for China's Ministry of State Security. Now, ShadowPad is actually believed to be a masterpiece of privately sold malware in Chinese espionage. Why? Because it's modular malware platform. That's right. It's customized to the core. It's actually maintained and updated regularly, and it's the primary backdoor to numerous hacking campaigns, including the CC Cleaner, NetSarange, and Asus's supply chain attacks recently. Now, China's foreign ministry responded by saying they don't condone the use of cyber warfare and attempted to turn the focus on U.S. hackers targeting China and other countries instead. Now, according to the report, this isn't the first time there was a Chinese-sponsored attack or hack on Indian power sectors. It happened back in February 2021 as well. Now, hackers seem to have gained their access via third-party devices connected to the internet, like IP cameras, which have been compromised themselves. Now, based on the long-term attacks here, it seems that the attacks were better for information gathering purposes than anything else to understand the underlying infrastructure that's actually there. This actually puts a higher long-term risk, which has a much larger impact than the first one. That means that there's only a matter of time before the actual attack might begin. Let's hope they ready before that happens. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, we have the News Bites. But before we get to the News Bites, we do have to thank a really great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Linode. Now, cloud services and hosting are always in organizations' minds, and that means you probably already are looking or even using Linode. Now, with Linode, you get 100% human free telephone support available worldwide 24/7, 365. Linode's award-winning support team is a highly trained team of service professionals dedicated to finding solutions while providing an unparalleled customer experience. Say no to bad customer service and experience the Linode difference. Now, if you haven't chose Linode yet, you might be asking, why should I choose Linode? Well, Linode's independence and mission drive them to a different standard where the customer is the driving force behind everything they do. They have pay-as-you-go, predictable and transparent pricing. Now, Linode pioneered the predictable flat pricing model for cloud computing. No more anxiety over hidden costs. Now, they make it simple to launch and scale in the cloud. With Linode, you'll get flat pricing across every global data center, an intuitive cloud manager, a full-featured API, best-in-class documentation, and award-winning support. Linode makes it easy to manage your applications in the cloud. Now, Linode has proven secure and reliable enterprise-grade infrastructure with 11 data centers worldwide, extensive peering and relationships, and their next-generation network. Linode delivers the modern infrastructure and performance you need to innovate at scale. I find with Linode, they are a one-stop shop. You don't have to look anywhere else. Now, whatever you want to do, you can host your website, build your app, store or backup media. You can easily launch and enrich your developer applications, hosted services, websites, AI, machine learning workloads, gaming services, or even CI/CD environments. Plus, you can launch and scale in the cloud with their virtual machines. You can even choose shared and dedicated compute instances or use your $100 in credit on S3 compatible object storage, managed Kubernetes, and more. Now, there are a lot of cloud providers out there that don't make it easy to use. Now, dashboards coming out their ears, not with Linode. I found them super easy to use. Now, Linode was rated the easiest to use by G2 Crowd in 2021. That's why cloud developers choose Linode, because they make managing complex cloud infrastructure easy with simple bundled pricing, full-featured APIs, and 100% human support. Linode helped pioneer cloud computing back in 2003, 3 years before AWS, so they have the longevity you know can be trusted. Get the cloud support experience you deserve with Linode. No tears, no handoffs. Get $100 in credit. Visit Linode.com/Twyatt. That's Linode.com/Twyatt. And we thank Linode for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now time for the bites. Now, we love no-code and low-code platforms. We talk about them all the time. There's plenty of them out there. You know, Salesforce has them. Microsoft has them. Lots of organizations have them. They have lots of good advantages. But the question is, do they have some disadvantages as well? So I'm going to throw this over to Brian. Brian, what's going on there?
Well, so again, dark reading article. It's got some real interesting points. I'm not going to read it. You know, you can go to the show notes, get the URL, and read it for yourself. Lou and I both read the article in some fairly good detail, and we both kind of almost got to opposite opinions. So the low-code, this article basically starts talking about how three essential automated DevOps tools can increase the rate of development success, reduce errors, raise ROI, and improve data security. Does this sound like an ad for Salesforce? Yes, it does. But it gives Lou and I and Kurt a chance to start talking and get into some of the behind-the-scenes things that are happening with no-code, low-code. I love no-code, low-code. I've been using things like Cayenne and so forth for years. It works. You can use it for all kinds of things. But here's one of the things I want to point out. I'm starting to hear from different management types, oh, no-code, low-code's great. I'm not going to have to keep quite the stable of developers around because now my subject matter experts can go and create software and apps that can go and meet the needs of our clients, and we can reduce our operational costs. I don't like that. You know, there's a lot of things good and bad about no code and low code. One of my favorites is I tell people, if you make a system easy enough that any idiot can use, any idiot's going to use it. And I've seen all kinds of situations where people have used no-code, low-code type situations and put it together into some really interesting combinations and paint themselves into a corner. So before I get too much onto the soapbox, let's go and hear both sides. Obviously, no-code, low-code has some really great advantages. Having the subject matter experts get in there and develop applications, and they're going to meet the customer's needs better because, it, at least I hope it would, the subject matter experts are working on it. Now, on the bad side is, gee, what happens if someone manages to go and put together a really interesting combination that opens up something? I'm not going to say the V word because it's not necessarily going to be that. Because reality is, in a no-code, low-code situation, the manufacturer, the vendors that created that, is probably going to spend a lot more time making sure that these modules are as well-tested as possible because they want to make money off it. But someone's going to find that combination. And that's where I personally think a true developer needs to get in there to go and try and make sure someone didn't find that combination. So, Lou, I'm going to throw it at you because you've been involved with no-code, low-code. It sounds like a very large portion of your career. Yeah. And let's get you up on the soapbox. You know, no-code, low-code, good, bad, something in between. What's your opinion?
So, you know, the interesting thing about low-code, no-code solutions are their inherent and their original use case was organizations that didn't have developers that needed to go and automate things, right? So they found ways to empower people, and they call it this new, the new name for it is to empower people to become citizen developers, which means they can go and record some things, or they can go and you know, and do click some things and develop a form or platform, and then be able to then go look at the code underneath to see how it actually is developed and maybe even learn how to code that way. And so that makes it for an environment for not only a teaching environment, but also helps organizations that are maybe fully vested in any particular part of the market that don't have developers, let's say a manufacturing company or a financial organization that need to be able to do some automated tasks, or they need to be able to do some compute that they don't want to have to do manually all the time. It empowers them to go and do it using these platforms. Now, you know, the interesting thing about this article is it talks about the fact that because the no-code, low-code solutions provide such a like low barrier of entry, that means that the complexity that they abstract away could be quite detailed, which means that if somebody goes and digs into that complexity and tries to change it and they don't know what they're doing, they can create some holes. They can create some issues, and that can create a lot bigger issues later on when they're deploying these changes out to the wild or their users are starting to use it. And so having more automation there will help detect those things. So making sure that they don't do things like cross-site scripting, or they don't do things like, you know, authorization bypassing, you know, trying to get to their data, or you know, having SQL injection in their code or something like that, right? So I think that there's lots of things that can happen when you give the keys to the kingdom, I guess the keys to the secret recipe underneath the code, underneath the actual no-code solution. And so making sure that, you know, you have the tools to protect yourself once you do that. And that happens with any platform. One of the engineering teams that reports to me is the Microsoft Access client team. And they've been doing no-code, low-code for 30 years. And I can tell you that the platform can be really easy to use, and it can be really beneficial, and you can build lots of great things with it that are very safe to use. But you can also go dig deep and develop very complex solutions that scale to entire organizations that also might have some vulnerabilities in them. And so you have to be very careful how you implement some things. So, you know, I agree with the essence of the article is that, you know, these things are very complex. And if you give people the ability to do things, you know, in a very simple but also complex way, there's always a way for them to make a mess.
Well, what do you think? You know, it sounds like if you had any wish at all for the no-code, low-code world, it would be maybe some sort of way to do better checks and balances, maybe. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there, you know, again, the no-code, low-code platforms do maintain, again, because they abstract everything away, they do maintain very high bar for what they do for security reasons. And so, you know, when they give you, like, you know, if you say, I need to be able to make remote calls so I need to have a form that has some data for my organization, but also makes remote calls to a remote server, like they require that you go through some steps to actually do that. So you're doing it on purpose, and you're asking for consent, and you're doing all these things in order to get it into the forms and into the application. So they try to make it so it is more secure. And again, they manage the security on the platform itself by making sure everything's up to date and all of their, you know, dependencies are secure and that kind of thing. So they do the best that they can. The question is, once they go through that gate of saying, yes, I need to be able to make remote calls, that doesn't mean they can't go make calls to a malicious location that, you know, siphons data out or something like that, right? So I think having additional support for, you know, making sure that the URLs that you're calling are not malicious, or they're same site domains or that kind of thing, is also very important as well. And I think there could be some additional tooling or some automation that can help with that.
Real compelling arguments. You know what? I think it's time to go and see what Mr. Kurt has been seeing. I think one of the big dangers, and this is my opinion, is that there's going to be not enough of checking behind the scenes, you know, once it's been implemented. And so I guess the question that I'm going to pose to Kurt is, are you seeing the corporate world, especially the C-suite, starting to fall into the trap of, well, maybe we don't need a DevOps team anymore? Obviously, it's great for people that don't have a DevOps team, but when you start doing something really complex, someone's got to go and look behind the curtain to make sure that it's working as advertised. What's the C-suite saying about no-code, low-code, Kurt?
Well, I don't know of any companies that have gone in and said, well, now that we've got this wonderful low-code, no-code opportunity, we can just fire our entire dev team. That's tending not to happen. The low-code, no-code is happening in a couple of ways. What I would call the good way and the bad way. The good way is when the dev team works with business units. And let's admit, most of the low-code, no-code is stuff that's going on in the business unit. The idea that the people who are closest to the business problem can write the application that puts a business process into practice. So what they'll do in that case is allow the subject matter experts to go in and do an application. Then someone from the dev team will come in behind them, perhaps work with them, to make sure that the application that they're developing will do what they think it will do. And that's where you do tend to have a bit of a disconnect. Something that seems obvious to someone who's not a developer might have some unintended consequences. And that's where the developing team comes on. When you have something like that, you tend to have better responsiveness to the business units, often lower development costs because the business, the subject matter expert costs less than the developer. And because a developer has checked it, you end up with code that is reasonably secure, an application that will not run off in the weeds too badly. Now, the bad way is when those same business units decide that the dev team is being too slow. You know, we put in a request for this kind of application or this kind of functionality 3 quarters ago, and they have not yet had a meeting with us to talk about how it's moving. And so we'll just go use one of these low-code, no-code tools that, you know, Mary in the next team over is just going to put on her credit card and expense every month. We'll do it and make the application. The problem there is twofold. One, you get people who end up writing applications that may or may not be entirely secure. And you end up allowing them to touch data sources that may be billed on an egress and ingress basis, you know, with data flow part of the billing. And all of a sudden, that data traffic is going up. The dev team, the operations team that does these contracts annually for this, suddenly see a raise in their costs and they don't know where it's coming from. That's a real problem. I've heard that with data online, with data storage, and even with things like CPU time for mainframes. Just a handful of years ago, that was a huge issue where people with low code would go in, write something that ended up whacking the mainframe for data, asking, you know, unintentionally, asking for some fairly complex reports to be run on the mainframe on like a daily basis when the dev team assumed that they would be run quarterly, and all of a sudden costs skyrocket. So that's two areas. And I'm going to real quickly bring up one more. Something that a lot of people are talking about is third party risk. This is where you have to worry about not the security of your applications and your people, but your partners, and frequently their partners. That's a huge issue with low-code, no-code because they are actually generating the code. You might generate the process logic, the programming logic, but the code generation is all happening with a third party. And in general, you don't know which libraries they're using, which pieces of code they've brought in to put that code in the field. So third-party risk is a huge issue and has to be addressed if you are knowingly using one of these tools. If you're unknowingly using it through shadow IT, well, heaven help you, because you've got a bigger problem than whether or not they're using a low-code tool.
Thanks, Curtis. Yeah, I do agree. I think that the second scenario that you brought up around cost, they definitely these platforms have to have some kind of governance when it comes to that. I mean, obviously, somebody can go and develop, and build a piece of a customization that they don't go and change to, let's say, have an infinite loop or something, and then takes up compute time and resources. They should have a way to manage that. And I think that if the platforms don't, then they are still working on them. Like, I think that that means that they're still in their infant stages and they still are growing. And I think those are good platforms to keep your eye out on because they need to develop them more. And I think the last one where you talked about dependencies, the bigger the platform that you're using, if you're using SAP or Salesforce or, Power Apps or something like that, these are large, very powerful platforms that are managed by very large organizations. Excuse me. These are very powerful platforms managed by very large organizations. And so those organizations should be managing their dependencies in a very secure way. And again, with all the supply chain hacks out there and call outs, I can guarantee that organizations are taking this seriously, especially those organizations, making sure that the things are more secure. But again, like you said, like you have to make sure that if you are going to be messing with the recipe, that you know exactly what you're doing and what's being utilized under the covers to do it. Otherwise, you could be creating, something that doesn't taste so good. So good points. I appreciate that. But all in all, I think no code, low code solutions are great for organizations. They have their downsides, but, I think they have a lot of pluses as well. So hopefully we'll see them evolve over the years as they kind of evolve the platforms themselves. Well, folks, that does it for the Bytes. Next up, we have our guest to drop some knowledge on the Twilight. But before we do have to thank another great sponsor of this week in enterprise tech, and that's Plextrack, the premier cybersecurity reporting and workflow management platform that empowers teams to win the right security battles. What if you can streamline the communication across the entire security department so that every team member can do their job more efficiently? From simplified data aggregation and reporting to integrated ticketing for remediation to analytics and visualizations for board reporting, Plextrack touches every aspect of the security management workflow. Gain a real-time view of your security posture by bringing all of your data sources together into one powerful platform where you can triage scanner results, generate powerful analytics and visualizations, assign remediation tasks, attest to your posture, and track progress over time. As a satisfied Plextrack client put it, we see Plextrack as part of our strategy to move quicker and be proactive. Now we have a real-time view of what we need to focus on and have an easy way of showing senior leadership. Plextrack serves every aspect of the Enterprise Security Team program with features designed to improve workflow, collaboration, and communication for each role. And they include a bunch of things. They include red team data aggregation, import data from all your automated vulnerability tools, triage and report results in half the time, blue team remediation, assign remediation tasks right on the platform or through simple integrations with the ticketing tools your team already uses, and track progress over time. Stakeholder communication, use powerful yet simple analytics to attest to security posture and prioritize issues. Tailor attestation and communication to the needs of both team members and the C-suite. And you also have continuous purple teaming assessment. Begin purple teaming or power up your current strategies with Runbooks, the best in industry tool for test plan execution. Security teams of all sizes and maturities can maximize the efficiency and effectiveness of their workflows with Plextrack. Customers report that they see Plextrack as part of our strategy to move quicker and be proactive, that the platform has a 5x ROI in year one, and it gives the cybersecurity operations a 30% increase in efficiency. Plextrack improves the entire security engagement lifecycle by making it easy to generate security reports, deliver them securely, and track the issues to completion straight from the platform. Book a demo today. Try Plextrack free for 1 month and see how it can change your life as a security professional. Simply go to plextrack.com/twit and claim your free month. That's plextrack.com/twit. And we thank Plextrack for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now time for the guests. Let's drop some knowledge on the Twilight Riot. It's my favorite part of the show. Today we have Sam Kennedy. He's one of Crestron's senior directors. And we're great to have him on the show. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Thank you very much. Really excited to be here.
Now, Sam, before we get into all the details, our audience loves to hear people's origin stories. You know, everyone has a unique journey. Can you take us through a journey through tech and what brought you to Crestron?
Sure. I don't know how much time we have, but so I came out of college. I went with a startup at a little small video conferencing company that didn't last very long. And I ended up going to a couple of resellers. I ended up working for an end user for about a year. And then I spent the last 17 years at Polycom and Poly. And I recently came over to Crestron about 4 months ago.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Now, What are you working through? And what brought you to Crestron? Like, what are you actually working on at Crestron? What are you focusing on?
So what I'm working on at Crestron is, so Crestron's really focused on the pieces that drive collaboration and productivity within an organization. And I think we are in about 90% of organization enterprises already. So Crestron has a really strong footprint in the enterprise world. But I think that when people think of who Crestron is, that we are that touch panel that goes in the large boardrooms that may have been programmed wrong and people are really afraid to touch. And so that's, I think, a lot of the view of Crestron. And one of the views that I'm driving since I've gotten here is to change the perception of who Crestron is, because, in fact, that is not who we are. We are one of the largest AV manufacturers in the world, and we're also one of the largest unified communications vendors out in the world. So we partnered very closely with Microsoft and Zoom and enabled their unified communications platforms to run on our hardware. So really who Crestron is this manufacturer of hardware that drives all the great audio, video collaboration within an organization. And what I'm doing is really amplifying the message, getting out there in front of customers, partners, analysts, people like yourselves, to really tell the story of who Crestron is and where we're going.
Fantastic. So yeah, you definitely called it out. Like, a lot of organizations use Crestron to, you know, not only devices, but their services to kind of integrate the workforce. Now that we've gone to this hybrid solution where a lot of organizations have remote workers as well as in place and on-site workers, they need a place to make sure that they can do that efficiently. Now, a lot of them had hardware. I know that Microsoft has hardware. They have conference rooms to support this. And I know that, you know, but with hybrid, it's becoming a more balanced type environment. Now, what are you seeing when it comes to work group solutions? What are they upgrading to and what are they changing to as the remote workforce comes more into play here?
It's been just overwhelming in that I've been in the industry for almost about 25 years on the UC side. And what we're seeing pretty universally is that there is a real just unbelievable demand around growth. Now, in our industry, on the UC side of the business, for the history of video conferencing and collaboration, the analysts typically say that only about 7 to 10% of conference rooms in the world are collaboration enabled. But what we're hearing from customers now is, because there's going to be this big shift of people working from home and there's this hybrid work, what we're seeing is growth where customers are saying, I need to enable collaboration in every part of my organization. So we're seeing this customer saying, how do I get there? How do I enable every single room? Now, on the other side, where AV is, customers are starting to, or enterprises are figuring out, how am I going to bring my employees back? Well, one of the ways to get those employees back is leveraging audio video technologies like wayfinding, digital signage, video walls. And so the fact that Crestron plays in both of these areas really sets us apart. Now, there's also this bridge between them where the AV side drives and helps the collaboration side. And what that enables is the user experience where they may not necessarily be trained on how to use any rooms, but they can just walk into the room and everything just happens automatically. And that really ties to Crestron's strength in that we we enable everything within the room. We can do lighting, shades, the video cameras, the audio devices, occupancy sensors, the microphones, the speakers, the content sharing, the cables. Crestron really differentiates ourselves in that we – the Teams phone that you're seeing there, that we differentiate ourselves in that we have the – we are the only manufacturer in the world that can truly provide end-to-end audio, video, and collaboration needs within an organization.
Right, right. Now you mentioned video walls. I know that that's Cheebert's trigger word, but we'll definitely bring them in a moment. We definitely want to talk about that. But I think some things are interesting you said. Obviously, there's a lot of orchestrations going on here, a lot of things working together. Flex workspace systems. How does this kind of all tie together with that?
So Flex for us is our brand name for all of our collaboration devices. And so what we build is we build the hardware for these rooms, and then we partner with Microsoft and Zoom where we run their software on our devices. So it's truly a partnership with the platform players like the Microsoft and Zoom. So they're delivering the great software that runs Teams rooms, or Microsoft Teams rooms or Zoom rooms. And then it's the Crestron hardware that enables that room. And so what that delivers is a consistent experience that a user that uses Teams at their desktop level, when they walk into the conference room, they get that consistent look and feel that you have at your desktop. We're able to bring that into the conference room. So Flex is our brand name for the solutions that go into all of the different conference rooms. And we can enable this for every room size. Now, again, as I said, I think that the industry sees Crestron as playing in those large rooms, boardrooms, classrooms, but I'm definitely here to tell you that Crestron plays in all size rooms, down from the desktop level, like we showed with that Teams phone, to small huddle spaces, to medium-sized rooms, large, and of course the large rooms and the boardrooms. We can enable this collaboration capability for every single size room, leveraging Flex. But the real value here is it's the Microsoft platform, their software that we're ultimately connecting to, or a Zoom room, their software running on our hardware that drives these experiences. So it's truly the best of the hardware that Crestron provides and the software that the large platform players provide.
So we had an interesting question or comment in the chat room. Obviously, sometimes these systems are kind of complex to set up if you're a small organization or want to set up themselves. You know, why would you consider a Flex system instead of trying to roll it on your own?
Yeah, it actually is a lot simpler than where we've been in the past. And so we really drive towards simplicity in deployment. And I'll give you some examples there where we enable standards-based cabling to run peripherals around the room, to run the audio video or run the audio to the table, to run content where someone just wants to walk in, plug in the HDMI into their laptop. We make that very simple, leveraging standards-based cabling. So I don't have to run USB-C. I don't have to run lots of proprietary or difficult to run cabling around the room. So we actually do make it very simplified. And we align ourselves from a management perspective with the different platform players. So I can manage this all leveraging Microsoft Intune or device management or Zoom with their device management. So we really truly can make this simplified for every room within an organization. And we're seeing this. We are seeing adoption in the thousands and thousands of rooms within organizations. And so it truly can scale. And so it's not as complicated as it would have been in the past. Right. The other thing I'll mention there is it's not just about the deployment. It is about the deployment. So we can have a simplified deployment method. We do that today. We are also very simple to upgrade, which is also a really key critical part. As Microsoft and Zoom are moving so fast from a development perspective, the strategy that Crestron has enables us to be able to up or allows a customer to upgrade pieces of the solution without having to do a rip and replace. And that's really really important as we look at where we are today and what the next few years or what's going to happen over the next few years. When you look at just the pace of evolution from Teams and from Zoom, they're moving lightning fast, right? It is awesome as a user that every day I feel like I walk in, I get onto a Teams call and Microsoft's added some cool new feature. Well, that pace that they're moving is will demand new capabilities within the rooms. And so what you're going to need to really spend a lot of time as a customer is what happens for that upgrade process. So it's not just about deploying a device and then I'm going to leave it there for the next 3 to 5 years. You're going to want to align your hardware to the pace of evolution that Microsoft and Zoom are driving. So therefore, having our strategy where it may, we do have a number of components, that strategy is actually going to play out to a customer's benefit because they're going to be able to upgrade pieces of that. I'll give you an example. We just have some new partnerships with Jabra where we're adding one of their video bars. We just acquired a company or some technology from a company about 2 weeks ago where we're going to enable some really amazing camera tracking capabilities. And if you want those devices in the room, you don't want to rip and replace the whole thing. You want to just take those cameras, those devices, add them into the room. So having we are simplified from a deployment, we're also simplified for upgrade. And I really think that sets Crestron apart.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I do want to talk a lot more. We have my co-host that also have some questions. But before we get to all that, I do want to thank one more sponsor before we get all that. And that is IT Pro TV. Now, your IT team needs the skills and knowledge to ensure your business is a success. And with IT Pro TV, more than 80% of users who start a video actually finish it. IT Pro TV is engaging and your team will enjoy learning on their platform. Give your team the tools they need to make your business thrive. Courses are entertaining and binge-worthy, keeping your team interested, invested in learning the whole time. Now, the tech industry is evolving, changing rapidly, just what we said, and your team needs to be trained. Right? They need to be trained today. When a new software release or system upgrade, a cyber threat faces your business, IT Pro TV offers the training and perspectives of those disruptions within days, if not hours. Now, why is IT Pro TV right for your business? Well, get all training and certifications for your team done all in one place. IT Pro TV has every vendor and skill you need for your IT team training. They provide Microsoft IT training, Cisco training, Linux training, Apple training, security and cloud, and so much more. Over 5,800 hours worth. You can do so much with IT Pro TV business plans. Track your team's results, manage your seats, assign and unsigned team members, and access monthly usage reports. You can see metrics like logins, viewing time, tracks completed, and much more. Easily manage your teams. You can manage subsets of users or teams by providing them with customized assignments, monitoring progress, and reporting on usage of the platform. Assignments can be full courses and even individual episodes within courses. Advanced reporting is in there as well. You get immediate insight into your team's viewing patterns and progress over a period of time with visual reports. Don't forget that IT Pro TV has individual plans too. Give your team the IT development platform they need to level up their skills while enjoying the journey. For teams of 2 to 1,000, volume discounts start at 5 seats. Go to itpro.tv/enterprise. Make sure to mention Enterprise 30 to your designated IT Pro TV account executive. You get 30% off or more on a business plan. And we thank IT Pro TV for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we've been talking with Sam Kennedy from Crestron. Lots more to talk about here, but I do want to bring my co-host back in. I want to start with Chibert first. Chibert?
Well, it's all about how much can I do with the equipment? How can I build upon it? Do I have to do a forklift upgrade when I want to get bigger and so forth? Crestron has a track record of being able to, I hate to use the word tinker toy, but it's a good analogy that I can take something, redo it, and then build something bigger. So like, for instance, you might start off with a flex workgroup room, but eventually you might want to be able to link multiple flex workgroup rooms, say across the country or at least across town, and then eventually go to an auditorium. In the past, that type of integration required you to go to Crestron University. Is the world changing? Are the integrators still there to do the really complex stuff, but can the day-to-day be done, the day-to-day changes be done by your internal IT group?
I think you nailed it, is that the Crestron is those building blocks. So if you want to drive extremely complicated, solve some really amazing problems, Crestron is those building blocks to enable those capabilities. But that's not all who Crestron is. So that if you are a tinker, if you are an integrator who needs to solve a command and control center that always has to be on, we can solve some really great problems, and we have an amazing set of integrators who can do that for you. But that's not every room, and that's not every application. And so out of the box, I can get out of the box on a unified communication system like Flex, I can get room controls where I don't need an integrator. As I tend to talk about it a lot internally and with customers, is that for Flex solutions, you don't need an integrator. You may want an integrator because they're going to solve some really amazing problems, and they can do just amazing things with Crestron solutions, but it's not a requirement. That IT organizations can roll this stuff out themselves. And I'd say that's one of the big trends that we've seen over the last few years, is AV's really start where AV years ago used to be this own separate division. What's happening is more and more AV as a group is falling into IT, and companies like Crestron, we're taking the IT-centric technologies and enabling that within our products. I'll give an example, something that one of our most successful products to drive AV around a building would be a product that we call NVX, where in the past, when I wanted to take content from one location to another location, I had to have a direct cable that went between the two boxes. Now, we can just take an NVX, put it onto your corporate network, and now run very high quality video around your network, and you don't have to use proprietary cables, and you're just leveraging IT based standards. And so we very much embraced IT strategies, IT protocols, and the IT staffs themselves to enable these capabilities. And so there's this very big drive around taking AV capabilities and making them more IT centric.
Well, let's take that idea just a little bit further. There's a lot of times you have mixed profiles or mixed regulations within a corporation. You might have some people within your organization have to do SARBOX. Some might be doing HIPAA. You might have an education component that requires FERPA. Are you folks addressing the needs of some of these people where you go in and you have to rearrange things? Maybe HIPAA, you might have to jump onto a different VLAN on the corporate network. Or say, for instance, it's going to go into a classified development environment where you have to switch over to a bulk encryptor. Is that starting to appear within the industry?
Absolutely. I've never seen a company within our industry to be so focused on security and reliability as much as Crestron is. Most of our products are JITC certified. That means we're allowed to sell into the United States Department of Defense. We're starting to add some other certifications that are recognized outside of the United States from a federal government perspective. We take security, reliability, redundancy very, very seriously. We have some amazing case studies. There's one on our website right now with NASA around mission control for the Mars rover. And so that can just show you some of the most secure environments in the world, as well as some of the environments that just can never fail, right? Just think about the mission control at NASA for the Mars rover. It can never, ever fail. And so Crestron really prides ourselves on security, on reliability, more than anyone in the industry. So absolutely, these types of standards are starting to show up within the AV and UC space.
Thank you, Chibert. Kurt?
Well, not surprisingly, one of the things that I'm curious about is how your customers approach the idea of security for these communications. You know, we had some very public instances early in the pandemic over people crashing things like Zoom conferences and coming in and making inappropriate remarks or doing various unpleasant things. Is that something that your customers tell you they're concerned about? Or is security for video communications still kind of low on the list?
No, it is extremely high on the list. Now, the benefit here is, like I was saying, that Crestron really is focused on the hardware on and deploying our products within an IT network. So we're more focused on what does, when our devices are plugged into the network, following all of those security protocols. Now, as I was saying earlier, the fact that we're partnered with Microsoft and Zoom from a platform level, when Microsoft and Zoom solve their security issues from a platform level, we're able to take advantage of that. So it's truly the best of both types of solutions going at the same time. So things that were happening early in the pandemic with Zoom that they spent a lot of time to solve for, which they did, we're just able to go along for the ride on that. We're much more focused of what does that hardware look like when it connects to my network? How do I run? How do I plug that in? Am I right? Am I on the correct VLAN? Am I following all the security protocols for having a device on the network? That's what customers are more talking to us about, and they're leveraging Microsoft and Zoom for once you're on the network and you're connecting to the cloud. What happens there? It's really that is part of the Microsoft and Zoom platform, and customers are extremely that's an important point for customers. But again, Microsoft and Zoom solve that in a very scalable way.
Well, speaking of hardware, a few days ago at the Enterprise Connect conference, out on the exhibit floor, a lot of companies were showing off at least early versions of things designed to take enterprise communications and conferencing into the metaverse, into the VR space. You saw lots of things like the Oculus headsets. You saw different plans for going in and using avatars, using virtual or augmented, or as Microsoft likes to phrase it, mixed reality. From the Crestron point of view, is this something that you find your customers pulling you toward? Or do you think that the whole virtual reality for communications in the enterprise thing is a little overblown?
I think it's very application specific. Right now, I would tell you that most organizations are, their main focus is how do I scale unified communications into every single room within my organization. That is absolutely priority for them over applications like AR and VR. I think augmented reality or mixed reality absolutely has a place to play. I think it's a little early and a little niche within the unified communication space. As the big platform players like Microsoft, Zoom, and others start to enable AR and VR capabilities, Crestron will be able to take advantage of that, right? We're really strong at building audio and video within an environment. And so absolutely customers will take advantage. We'll be able to enable customers within those use cases. But right now, the primary focus for most companies that I'm talking to is how do I scale? From now on, that I'm going to have users that are going to be remote from now until the foreseeable future. And so how do I enable every room as my users get back to the office, and some of them come back to the office and some people are working from home? Priority number one is enable as many rooms as I can and then deliver an experience that's equitable for everybody that's on the call. That's the primary focus for most customers right now versus AR and VR. So I don't want to say that it's overblown. AR and VR are overblown yet. They're just very application specific, when the scale for us right now is how do I enable every room within my organization? That's the real focus for most enterprises and most organizations.
Well, time flies while you're having fun. We had a great conversation. Unfortunately, we're running a little low on time. Sam, thank you so much for being here. Before we close up, we do want to give you a chance to maybe tell the folks where they can get started, where organizations go, get started, get contacts.
Well, I'm very happy to be here. Thank you very much. I would love the opportunity to come back. It's really enjoyable for me. I love talking about this stuff. But you go to Crestron.com, talk to any of our partners, and to get more information, come see demos. It's really exciting to be in a technology that is very tangible, right? Everybody can relate to being on a video call and an audio call. You can touch and feel our products. And so it's very exciting to be part of technology in this part of the technology industry. So I'd encourage you to find a sales rep, talk to our partners, go to Crestron.com, get a demonstration, because we our products demo so well. So do whatever you can to talk to us, but it's a very, very exciting time right now in our industry.
Thanks again, Sam. Well, folks, you've done it again. You sat through another hour of the Best Thing Enterprise podcast in the universe. So definitely tune your podcatcher to Twyatt. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my co-host, Sonny DeBarrio, Mr. Brian Chiebert. What's going on for you in the coming week? Where can people find you?
Well, you know what? I'm tinkering. Here, you like this? That is actually a Bluetooth keyboard and touchpad.
That's
there's
cool.
Actually a little thing right on the side so I can have the dongle in there. Very cool. I'm actually building more toys. Gotta have toys. And so wonderful, wonderful. Anyway, folks, you know, I love hearing from you. On Twitter, I'm ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab on Twitter, and love to hear from you. And you know what? If you so feel like it, you're more than welcome to toss me some email. I'm Chiebert, spelled C-H-E-E-B-E-R-T, at twit.tv. And you're also welcome to throw it at Twyatt at twit.tv, and that'll hit all the hosts. And you know what? Chickenhead 21. Yeah, I actually like those little keyboards enough that I actually have a half dozen in stock because we were doing a lot in the field and needed something that was rechargeable and small and Bluetooth so that I could actually talk to gear out on the end of the pier without having to get wet. Fun and games.
Very cool stuff. You always have the fun toys, Chiebert. Thanks for being here. Well, we also have to thank our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin as well. Curtis, what's going on for you in the coming week, and where do people find you?
Well, I'll be back in the saddle full time for the coming week, doing more interviews on cybersecurity awareness training, beginning to do some work on risk assessment and management, getting ready for RSA, which is coming up in June. I'm making appointments already for that conference. And I've got a piece I mentioned, a brand new piece up at Dark Reading. So head over to Dark Reading, the Omdia tab, and you will see my piece up there. No word on security today because I was off. It'll be back next week. And as always, I'd love to hear from those watching and listening to the Twyatt Riot. Please hit me up on Twitter at KG4GWA on Twitter, or you can follow me on LinkedIn or Facebook. Always happy to hear from you.
Thank you, Curtis. Thank you guys for being here. The show definitely wouldn't be the same without you guys. Well, folks, I thank you as well. You're the person who drops in each and every week to watch and to listen to our show to get your enterprise and IT goodness. We want to make it easy for you to watch and listen and catch up on your IT enterprise news. So go to our show page right now, twit.tv/Twyatt. There you'll find all the amazing back episodes, the show notes, the co-host information, the guest information, of course, the links of the stories that we do during the show. But more importantly, next to those videos, there you'll get those helpful subscribe and download links. Support the show by getting your audio version or video version of your choice. Listen on any one of your devices or any one of your podcast applications because we're on all of them. Subscribe. Best way to support the show. Also, you may have also heard Club Twit. That's right. It's a members-only ad-free podcast service with a bonus Twit Plus feed that you can't get anywhere else. It's only $7 a month. And one of my favorite things is the exclusive access to the members-only Discord channel there. A lot of great channels and great discussions in the back channel there. I'm finding myself checking it all the time. So a lot of fun stuff going on in there. and some really fun and interesting channels. There's some I see lots of channels. There's cooking channels. There's hardware channels. There's just lots of great stuff. So definitely check that all out. Join Club Twit. Be part of this movement. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit. Now, Club Twit also offers group plans. It's a great way to give your team access to our ad-free tech podcast. Now, the plans start with 5 members at a discounted rate of $6 each per month, and you can add as many seats as you like. And this is really a great way for your IT department, your developers, your tech team, your sales team to stay up to date with access to all of our podcasts. And it's just like regular memberships. They can join the Twit Discord server and get the Twit Plus bonus feed as well. So definitely join Club Twit or take advantage of the group plans as well at twit.tv/clubtwit. After you subscribe, impress your friends, your family members, your coworkers with the gift of Twit, because we talk about a lot of fun tech topics on this show, and I think they'll find it fun and interesting as well. So definitely share the gift of Twit. Now, if you've already subscribed and you're available Friday, 1:30 p.m. Pacific time, we do this show live. That's where you come see the behind the scenes of come see how the pizza's made at live.twit.tv. We have all the streams on there. Come check that out. It's a live stream of everything that's going on. Plus, if you're going to watch the show live, come and join our IRC channel as well, our infamous irc.twit.tv, or even jump on your favorite IRC client and jump on the irc.twit.tv server into the Twit Live channel there. And we have a lot of great characters, a lot of great people that come in each and every week. Reverb Mike, Chickenhead 21, Retcon 5, everyone's in there. Loquacious. So be in there, Adam 24. Be in there because I guarantee they'll have a lot of great conversations and last some great questions as well. So definitely be part of the IRC channel. Now, also hit me up at twitter.com/LouMM. I post all my enterprise tidbits out there. Plus, if you want to direct message me out there, any show ideas or any things about the show or even some topics you want to talk about or even just get an opinion, definitely hit me up there. I love having conversations with people like you. Now, if you want to know what's going on in my work week at Microsoft, you can definitely check out developers.microsoft.com/office. There we post all the latest and greatest ways that you can customize your office suite, make it more customizable to you. You can record macros. You can play them back periodically using Power Automate. You can do lots of fun, amazing stuff. You can call Microsoft Graph calls. You can use single sign-on applications that kind of get sideloaded with your Word or your Excel applications. So definitely check it all out. Lots of great ways to customize your office experience. Now, I do want to make sure I thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week, and we couldn't do the show without them. So thank you for all their support over the years. I also want to thank all the engineers and staff at Twit. I also want to thank Mr. Brian Chi one more time. He's not only our co-host, but he's also our producer, and he does all the bookings and the plannings for the show, and we really couldn't do the show without him. So thank you, Chibert, for all your support over the years. And of course, before we sign out, we also have to thank our editor for today, Anthony. He makes us look good after the fact, after we make all of our mistakes. He cuts them all out. And also our TD today as well. He's the talented Mr. Ant Pruitt. He does a fabulous show on hands-on photography. And I just caught you posting the latest one, and I was about to listen to it today as I was on my run, but I didn't bring my phone, so I'll have to listen to it today or later today. What's going on in that episode?
Shame on you for not bringing your phone. What is happening there? But no, this is a fun week on hands-on photography. I appreciate you checking it out and talking about it. I take a look at another Adobe alternative, and that is Affinity Photo. I did a bit of a, just help you get started with it because it does have a pretty good value with it. So go check it out. twit.tv/hop. That's twit.tv/HOP. Appreciate the support.
Thank you, Ant. And until next time, I'm Louis Maresco, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep quiet.
If you are looking for a midweek update on the week's tech news, I got to tell you, you got to check out Tech News Weekly. See, it's all kind of built in there with the title. You get to learn about the news in tech that matters. Every Thursday, Jason Howell and I talk to the people making and breaking the tech news, get their insights and their interesting stories. It's a great show to check out. twit.tv/TNW.